in the place with under some pressure. Hit and set by Gilbert Brown. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies. The old gravedigger.
The back of the club, Mackin' my crew's behind me. I mean, this guy was 345 pounds, and when you have a nickname like the gravedigger, you're God.
And now, presented by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Packer Report Podcast with Gilbert Brown. Here's your host, publisher of the Packer Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Green Bay Packers fans? Welcome back to the Packer Report Podcast with Gilbert Brown, brought to you by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. We are so very pleased to be with you, and joining me as always, Mr. Gilbert Brown. Gilbert, how are we doing, buddy?
Doing good today, buddy. Doing good. We got sun out here. Still extremely cold, but having a good day so far.
Yeah, I feel like I've been bamboozled by these weather forecasts. Looked last week, and it's like, oh man, the 30s are coming. You know, the 30s are coming, and then the 40s are coming. And when the 40s come, the snow melts. And I got all excited, and it's 13 below zero here. I'm being lied to. I've been bamboozled. You know, I'm waiting on that good weather, waiting on even just reasonable weather. Man, it's nuts. But I am going to escape. I'm going to escape on Monday and head to Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. Just released their schedule as far as when each position groups are going to be speaking, when they're going to be working out, when they're going to be doing the bench press, all sorts of stuff like that. And we will be live. Packer Report will be live in Indianapolis. I'll have a chance to be part of the scrum, if you will, when Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst and Packers head coach Matt LaFleur take the podium. So if you guys have any questions, we're not just going to take direct fan questions to the coach, but if you have any topics, if you have anything that you'd really like to know from Coach LaFleur, hit Gilbert and I up on Twitter, and we might have the opportunity, or I might have the opportunity to ask either Coach Matt LaFleur or GM Brian Gutekunst those questions at the combine, because we'll be part of the, like I said, part of that group that kind of huddles around and gets to ask questions for about a good half hour. So lots of opportunity to get information at the combine. They make it more and more accessible every year. It becomes more and more of a media event because, you know, these guys, they do their year-end press conferences, and obviously this year it was later, you know, it was late January because Green Bay went all the way to the NFC Championship game before their season ended. But in years past, sometimes they'll do it around Christmas time, and you won't hear from anybody in the organization again until March. And for a 24-hour news cycle like we have now, that's a long time to not have anything to write about, to not hear from the GM, not hear from the coach. And so we'll be excited to get in front of Matt and Brian at the combine. Gilbert, you were a combine participant. I believe the year would have been 1993.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 1993 was my year to be treated like cattle coming through there. You know, we had to, basically half naked in your shorts and walking around in front of everybody through lines and getting interviewed. And, you had some back then they had like, I don't know how you call it, like an investigation team where they would go through kind of like your history of what you was doing, what you've been going through, you know, how'd you live your life type thing. Because they want to know, they give me a kid all this money. They want to go through your background and make sure that they're making the right decisions. So you had to sit in front of those guys. You talk to a lot of coaches, and then you go through the physical part of it, your bench and your running and your athleticism. And it's a few days of going through things that, you know, it'll blow your mind if you're not ready for it. But, you know, the good ones try to prepare as best as they can and go through the rigmarole, and hopefully a team will select you.
Yeah. So walk us through. Now, I understand.
It's probably totally different.
Right. But walk us. So it's been 27 years since you were at the NFL Combine. So we're, as a group, we're going to forgive you, Gilbert, if you don't remember every painstaking detail, but kind of walk everyone through what your week was like. Or it might have been less than a week, you know, at that time, but walk us through, you know, your arrival in Indianapolis and kind of where they have you guys stay. Are you staying with buddies? Are you staying with your position group? And then kind of walk us through that entire week. What kind of questions were they asking you about your personal life? Just sort of the details of how that process looked in 1993. And then as someone who's been to the last couple of combines, I can maybe talk a little bit about how it's changed.
Well, it's kind of like I said before, it's kind of eye opening. You know, I'm a kid from Kansas, you know, grew up in Detroit, being exposed to a resume that you got to give. Now, it's kind of like you're auditioning for a job. It's a resume. You put your resume out there physically. You're being scrutinized for everything, you know, how you act. People, you got people peeping around corners even looking at you to see what you're doing. They room you with a guy. Doesn't matter what it is, you know, who, what position he is, you know, it's just the luck of the draw. And you have to act like you're not intimidated, but you are, because, you know, it's 12 guys that's similar to you, look like you, or better than you looking, and you're going out here and you got to take your shirt off and you got to do all these measurements and different things. And you wondering if your height, you know, because I was coming in at 6'2.5", you know, and I got guys at 6'5", 6'6", you know, guys at my position. Being able to get on the scale and see how much you weigh, everybody looking. It's kind of like, you know, if you're a woman and you get on, you don't want nobody to know your weight and everything. But imagine you, if you're a woman and you got 50 people in the room and you got to get on the scale and everybody's jotting down your weight. And, you know,
you have almost no clothes on.
Yeah, with no clothes on. You know, it's like cattle almost, man. So you're embarrassed about that. You know, some guys ain't embarrassed because they look like Tarzan, but play like Jane type guys, you know, and everything. But, you know, you got to do it. I mean, if you don't do it, that's a strike against you. They get into your personal life about, you know, have you ever been in trouble? Are you involved with drugs? Have you ever took drugs? You know, if you had an incident, what happened on this time? I mean, they go through everything, you know, and then, you know, you do all that, and then it's the physical part. You know, if you get under the bench and you got to do 225, if I did it 30 times and one guy did it 35 times, you know, type things. And then you get out there, and if you ran a 4.9 or 5 flat, or I mean, all that stuff, it weighs on you when you get back to your room. Like, could I have done better? Or what's the deal with this? What's the deal with that? I mean, it's just a thing where you're looking to be the best at your position, or at least looking to get drafted. And, you know, during those times, no matter what you did, you can either go up or you can either go down. It's one of those things where, you know, if you believe in yourself and you go in and you push past all the negativity that's in your mind to go in and do your best, sometimes your best ain't good enough. because there's always a guy that's better. So it's intimidating. It's not nothing. I mean, you look at those some guys that don't even got to do half of what you got to do. Oh, we're just showing up and run a 40 and I'm done. You know, I'm like, how can he do that, man? Who do you think he is, type stuff, you know? But it's some guys that they just refuse to do it, or they don't have to do it because it's already, everybody already believes in what they do. So it's a, to me, it's just like, you know, let's go off what I did on the football field, you know. But then again, if these people paying you all this money, you got to do what they tell you to do, and you got to understand the game that they want you to understand. It's not your way, it's their way, or leave. And that's how it is.
So let's we're gonna play a little game here, if that's all right.
Sure.
We're gonna do a little game here, because I would almost guarantee you don't remember your numbers. Mm-hmm. And so real shortly, we're gonna do a quick over under, because I have got, and granted, these could be completely made up, but I've used my internet powers to find your combine results. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you some questions.
Okay.
So did you measure in above or below 6'3"?
Mm-hmm. Below, probably.
That's right. You were 6'2¾". Above or below 325?
I was probably above
330. That's right. Did you run the 40 faster or slower than 5.2?
I'm going to say faster.
5.12. You were moving.
Yeah, for me not to be, I worked out, but I wasn't really like working out.
I want to talk to you about that in a second, because I want to talk about these pre-combine camps that these kids go to, these training facilities that literally get these kids ready for the combine. They don't work on football for 3 months, yeah. Any football. It's just working out with the hopes of working out. So I want to talk about that in a second. Did you bench 225 more or fewer than 25 times?
I'm going to say more.
24 reps. And finally, did you vert more or less than 2 feet?
Less.
23 inch vert. But yeah, I mean, these are, hey, for a guy who's 330, these are still impressive numbers, especially the 5.140. You don't see a lot of guys 330 even nowadays moving like that. And that's the next thing I wanted to chat with you about was your combine preparation. What did you do to get ready for this thing? Because you go, you're lacking. But like, I've had buddies that were college athletes that opened their own gym and did training for pro day, did training for the combine. I've obviously spoken to kids that, you know, when their college season is done, you know, they'll play their bowl game around Christmas, whatever. But then they've got about 90 days of stuff, and they are preparing on how to run the 3-cone and preparing on how to run the 40 and getting their bench up and getting their vert up. And they are going through practice interviews, and they are getting ready to, you know, go through the ringer, but they have people coaching them on how to go through the ringer, how to deal with these questions and stuff from teams. Gilbert, what did your combine prep look like?
Man, I was in a funk at that time. I had, beginning of my last year at Kansas, I had lost my father, and I was going back to school, and I got in an accident, and I was I didn't make if you ever go back and you look at the Kansas, you know, what is that, media day where they put everybody on the pitcher and stuff. I was not in it because I missed it, you know, because I was in that accident. And but as soon as I got back, they all thought that I was just messing around because I didn't want to run the running test. So at that time, I was they put me on third team, which Kansas really didn't have a third team.
Right. They kind of still don't.
Yeah. So I was third team. And when the season started, I was never to start. I was in a three-man rotation with Dana Stubblefield and Chris Mamalonga, both who made the league. And I was in three-man rotation, but I was never meant to start. So I was already in this funk, you know what I'm saying? And after six games, they couldn't hold me back because I just said, hey, when I get in there, I'm blowing everything up. I don't care. I ain't listening. I'm blowing everything up. They ain't going to do this to me. So I did that. Finally got to start after six games. Then all my stuff got held back because I was late going to the Senior Bowl because they didn't tell me. Different things like that, man. So I was in this funk, and I didn't really work out like I was supposed to because I thought I can do this, that, and the other. And by the time I got to the Senior Bowl, I mean, I was working out, but nobody was helping me or doing anything. And once I got to the Once I got to the combine, it was, come on, man. It was just raw. So if I'd have did what I was supposed to do, my numbers probably would have been better. I'd have had I knew I could have ran like a 4.8, 4.9, jump vertical. Everything would have been better. Bench would have been better. But I was in that funk where, you know, I just wasn't, you know, ready. But you know, it's understandable, young kid like that, you know, lose your father, going through all that stuff. You know, your mind has to be focused on football, nothing else. And it was that at that time, it was hard for me because even after the season was over in Kansas, I went home. You know, I tried to go home, be by my family and different things like that. So I didn't even finish my schooling. And just, you know, a young kid not thinking, doing the things, but the Lord blessed me with some type of ability to be able to get drafted in the third round. I was, for what I was in the top five of defensive tackles coming out after the season was over, you know. So I was figuring, okay, you know, that'll carry me a little bit. But I should have worked out and I should have did the things that I was supposed to do. And I'm not ashamed to say it today because my story could help some of these other guys prepare themselves better and realize what's at stake and what they have in front of them. And I don't mind telling this story. And hopefully somebody will listen to this and understand how important it is to put your best foot forward when you're going out for jobs, not just football, not just if you're applying to be a teacher or auto worker or whatever. Your resume has to be good and you have to apply yourself to it or you won't get that job. Thankfully, I did and went off to nasty Minnesota and ended up in Green Bay.
So I want to just touch on one thing you said. It was a little bit offhanded, but I think we need to know the story. Who didn't tell you about the Senior Bowl?
Well, at the time, I don't know how they do it now, but you get mail and you get different things. And at that time, I don't know if I made Glenn Mason, which is was my coach at the time,
former Kansas coach, former Gophers coach, now a Big Ten Network analyst.
Yeah, so I don't know if I made him mad, or somebody just held the mail back, or somebody didn't call me, or anything. It was just like I was going, and the last straw for me was I was going to class. I was coming back from class, and somebody, one of the people called me and said, hey, man, you need to get down here because Mean Joe Green is working out Dana Stubblefield and Chris Mamalonga. I said, what? I mean, for real? Like, nobody told me. But they was already down there working out. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know what I did, or because I never got in trouble in school. Never, you know, just normal kid stuff from Detroit stuff, but nothing seriously to get me put in jail or on the news. So, you know, I don't know what I did to the organization or whatever. I don't hold no ill wills against them, because I know that the organization didn't do it. It's the dude that's driving the car. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not that type of guy to hold grudges or anything, but it was a learning process for me.
That's nuts, man. I mean, so like today, you're asking about today. Today, I'm sure they get a letter, but you know, by the time they're at that point, they've hired an agent. You know, they have representation,
right?
So the Senior Bowl is tweeting out that they've invited this guy.
Listen, I was a day and a half late to the Senior Bowl because they didn't tell me.
Good Lord.
So, when I got up in the Senior Bowl, when I got to the Senior Bowl, sorry, that was my bat phone. When I got to the Senior Bowl, I was coming in a day and a half late. So everybody looking at me like, who is this guy? Who do you think he is? What in the world going on? You know, when I get there, then everybody wants to put me up against the biggest, toughest offensive guard that they had, you know. And sometimes if the weather was so bad that we had to go inside, and we was on the gym floor in socks going against each other. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, oh my God, the deck was stacked against me. But I fought through it. I didn't give up. It's designed. Sometimes things are designed for you to fail. And if you fall into the trap to fail, you're not going to succeed. I just took it like a man and said, I'm going to do the best I can with what I got. And here I go.
All right. Well, like I said, you know, get ready for some top-notch coverage from Packer Report from this year's Combine. I wanted to run you guys through kind of a week in the life of a combine participant now. So we'll just take the tight ends, quarterbacks, and wide receivers, because those are
why?
The guys.
Why can't we just start with the big uglies? Why
because they get that? they get their third.
What are you talking about? Pretty boys always win.
Well, the DBs get there last, and those are the defensive
pretty boys always win.
Yeah, the DBs get there last, and those are the defensive pretty boys. So, you know, that's your prime time. And so it's an eight day event that has four groups rolling through 5 days of stuff. So this is what happens for a tight end, quarterback, wide receiver. On Sunday, which is this Sunday, you arrive in Indianapolis, you register, they do orientation, and then you do team interviews. So scouts, coaches, general managers, directors of player personnel, college scouting directors, they're all up in your business. And that is no physical activity the first day. Day two, this is kind of the cattle thing that Gilbert's talking about. You go in and you do your weigh-in. They measure, and they measure everything. They measure your hands, measure your arms. They measure your height. You obviously weigh you. So they have all of those things figured out, all of those football relevant measurements. Then you do a pre-exam at the hospital, which I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to know what that's about. I would guess that it's more of just a physical or just answering a bunch of questions. And then you have a second period where you have team interviews. Then the third day is your actual medical exam. They bring you to the hospital. They do a full, you know, the workup, they do the works, they scan, I mean, everything, because these teams, you know, as Gilbert mentioned, are giving a ton of money to real young guys. They want to make sure that there aren't existing medical conditions, existing injuries, stuff they don't know about, stuff that might concern them. I know this year, Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, his hip is going to be one of the biggest, one of the biggest stars in Indianapolis, because if that thing, you know, it tests well, or if it is cleared, he goes from, you know, a question mark to a surefire top five pick. And if it gives people problems, you don't know what could happen to a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, because these teams get really, really scared about investing those high picks in a guy that, you know, may or may not make it. So you've got your medical exam, and then you've got a position coach interview, and then psych testing is the third day as well. Gilbert, did you take a psychological test when you were at the combine?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's day three, which is interesting because you've already had 2 days of interviews. Then on Wednesday, which is the first day, obviously, then that the media will get a shot at any of these kids. So you've got your It's Tuesday. Tuesday is media. So you've got your psych testing, the position coach interview, the medical exam, and media. So Tuesday, we will have tight ends, quarterbacks, and wideouts. And then they've got an NFLPA meeting on Wednesday, more team interviews. They'll do the bench, and they will do the psych test if they didn't do it the day before. Then the final day that they're there, and this is that way for everybody, the final day that they're there, they will do the on-field workout. So they will do the actual, for example, this group will do the actual position drills for wide receivers, tight ends. They will do the actual throwing for quarterbacks. They'll do the actual catching for wide receivers. And obviously they will run the physical tests, the 40, the three cone, the vert, all of that stuff. And then finally on the fifth day, you depart, you leave. So the wide receivers, quarterbacks and tight ends will be out of town on Friday. They will be gone. A little bit different from your setup, huh?
Totally. Well, not. I shouldn't say totally. It's similar. I mean, they have a formula, and they've been doing it for years. So certain things, they don't change. I mean, you know, you might got guys complaining about the cattle part of it or the prodded part of it or having to walk around with just shorts on and women in the room or whatever. You know, you got to deal with that just like you got to deal with women in the locker room. You know, it's just a totally different feel for a young kid that don't understand that. So, yeah, it's different, but it's very similar to what everyone has to go through. So that's what they tell you. Every such and such did it, so you got to do it. So it is.
I would guess that the media coverage is the biggest difference, right? I mean, I'm sure they had folks there, but I can't imagine in 1993 you stood up at a podium and addressed 12 people.
Well, come from Kansas, ain't you?
Yeah, probably. Never mind.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, it ain't like we was in one of those big Florida states or Michigan or something like that. You know, Kansas, man, ain't nothing going on but a couple cows.
Sure. All right. So let's take a quick break to pay a couple of bills. And that, of course, is our presenting sponsor, Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. And this is, you know, this is when it's important, folks, to head over to Stadium View and make sure that they know that Ross and Gilbert sent you. And the reason we say that is because everybody knows that Stadium View is the place to be on Packers game day. Mostly because usually in the morning, you get to meet and greet with Gilbert Brown and whichever poor soul he drug with him, whether it's Santana Dotson or Amon Green, whoever he made wake up super early that morning and head to Stadium View for the tailgate festivities. But Stadium View is more than that. It is a year-round, a fantastic place to hang out at. Here are the Wednesday drink specials and food specials because we're dropping this on a Wednesday. 325 double Captain Morgan mixers. So, I mean, guys, it's hump day. If you're trying to get through the midweek, it doesn't sound like it gets any better than that. 325 double Captain. You can have a very, very nice evening for about $9. Very, very nice. And then on the lunch special on Wednesday, tenderloin tips. Over noodles or mashed potatoes for $8 and traditional and boneless wings for 40 cents from 7 to 11. It just sounds phenomenal. It's 8:17 in the morning and I'm just hungry over steak tips right now.
Steak tips. Yeah, yeah, that's a good outlook on looking at things this early in the morning. But yeah, Stadium View has a variety of things that we can talk about all day. But I like to talk about the people. The people are what makes the thing go. And they got great specials and great things and great drink specials, food specials. But it's the people. It's the people that bring you back. It's the help that they have. They don't just pick anybody off the street. They do an interview process to bring in the best people they can possibly do. And for 9 times out of 10, it works, you know. And that's what I really like about Stadium View, because the people there make you want to come back.
Absolutely. No, I you know, dealing with Bob and like you've mentioned, the security staff over there and the event staff over there and everybody that has had a chance to work with Gilbert and I has been so professional and so courteous and so kind. And like I said, guys, it's easy to go to Stadium View on game day. But where that place is awesome is Monday through Sunday every week. It's an awesome place to just grab lunch, awesome place for happy hour after work, whatever. It just, the atmosphere is phenomenal. The people are phenomenal. The food is great. I've never had bad food there. Go check out Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall when you get a chance, especially in the off season. And you know what? Tell them that Ross and Gilbert sent you. It's important. Tell them. They got to know. All right, Gilbert, we've got a couple minutes to wrap up here. And I want to just talk about some team needs, because we haven't talked any, you know, real, whatever, deep football in a couple shows. Let's talk about team needs as far as the Packers go. And we'll talk about free agency and the draft. And we'll basically, you know, talk about the guys that you think they're going to bring back aren't on the team, you know, so ranking them as though re-signing those guys like your Brian Bulagas, like your Kenny Clarks is a big deal. So I want to kind of have you rank these as team needs in these four spots: defensive tackle, linebacker, offensive tackle, and wide receiver. So DT. DT,
I would say DT one.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's a must. You got to go. Now, this is mine. You know, I'll go DT, OT, receiver, and anything left.
Right. Because the linebacker was the fourth choice. And that's where, you know, Blake is a free agent and is probably, you know, he's, I think, over the last 2 years. If you combine the last 2 years, he's number one in the league in tackles. And whether or not you think tackles are an important stat, he's going to get an offer. I mean, I can promise you that. There are going to be teams interested in Blake Martinez. Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle, your situation is Kenny Clark needs to be re-signed. I think Kenny Clark will be re-signed. I think from a team-building standpoint, with how young he was when they drafted him, how many good years he should have left, from a, you know, they understand how important good big players are. From even just a PR perspective, man, if they let Kenny Clark go after one contract, that would be really rough. I think they're going to take care of that. And I wouldn't mind, as you and I have mentioned, I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing them add a guy to play next to him. And I've said that multiple times. I think that giving him some help, maybe with somebody, a longer guy, 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", type of guy. Because Kenny's kind of squattier. You know, he's not short by any stretch, but he's not.
That's where me and you differ so much.
Okay.
You know, to me, it ain't about the height of it. To me, it's about how tough can they play up against the run, not getting rooted out of there. And being 6'5", 6'6", doesn't make a difference. I mean, you got to have a guy that can take a double team on and be able to play big so that linebacker can roam. You know, to me, the height doesn't make a difference. But that's for me, you differ, though.
I'll tell you this, Gilbert. You look at the defensive lines, and I know that you know, it's not the only reason that they were there. But you look at the defensive lines for Kansas City and San Francisco, the two Super Bowl teams, long dudes. Chris Jones, who's a free agent, who would be my dream addition to the Packers. Chris Jones, 6'5". Eric Armstead, 6'7". DeForest Buckner, 6'6". Joey Bosa, 6'5". I mean, look, I understand what you're saying, and I know it's easier to defend the run when you have leverage.
The kid that left us and went to Kansas City, how tall is he?
Pennell, 6'4". 6'4", 340. Pennell's huge.
Thank you. That's what we need.
He's 6'4".
That's what we need. Okay. You went 6'5 and up. I'm going 6'5 and down. 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". You going 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 900.
All right. Well, hopefully, I haven't looked, but I would assume that since he was a mid-season signing, that Pennell was just a one-year deal on the minimum. I would guess that Mike Pennell is a free agent. That would be my guess. He would be available.
I would get him back and put sit season salt down a little bit.
Okay, Dean Lowry, I got it. It took me a minute. It's early in the morning.
I got nicknames, double nickel, season salt. You know,
season salt. All right, so set season salt a little bit. Yeah, you know, and then offensive tackle. You've got Brian Bulaga, whose deal just expired. Jared Veld here, whose deal just expired. And David Bakhtiari, whose deal expires next year. Now, I can just about promise you that David Bakhtiari not going anywhere. Left tackles are worth their weight in gold. He is probably the best one in the league, and he's only 28. So they're going to give him another deal. They're going to give him another opportunity to be a Green Bay Packer into the future. I'm not worried about that. The right tackle spot, though, I think you can wonder what they might do over there. Veld here was very good. He's 2 years older than Bulaga, but maybe you draft the kid and you just sign up for 1 year of Veld here to kind of not to, you know, steal your bit, but to season him a little bit. You get a right tackle and kind of teach him the ropes for a year, or you bring back Bulaga. And the only thing about bringing back Bulaga is it might cost $10 million, and they've only got about 24, 23 to spend this offseason. So, and a significant amount of that has to go to Kenny. So there's kind of a balancing act there. Wide receiver, everybody knows. Everybody knows. It's the most talked about thing all offseason is the need for new blood at that position. I will say this is the best group of wideouts in a draft since 2013, flat out. I did a piece on Packer Report ranking this class up against the class from the last 2 years, and they ended up with, just on my grading system now, but they have ended up with 22 of the best 37 kids from the last 3 years. So more than half of the best kids from the last 3 years at the wide receiver position are in this class. And that's not just a mean thing, guys. That is a national scouts that I've talked to, national draft guys. Everybody is just raving about this wide receiver class and how good these kids are. Maybe the Packers just pick two of them. Maybe they go ahead.
Don't you think that all the good ones will be gone by the time we pick?
But that's the thing, Gilbert, is they won't. You know, they've got – so I've got kind of three tiers, if you will, three categories that wide receivers fit into when I do my evaluations of them. And so tier one is they're going to be a star. And the last two, so 2019, 2018, I didn't give one kid that grade. I thought I just didn't see it. Right. And so the next category, and by the way, there are four stars in this year's class, my opinion, but CeeDee Lamb, the kid from Oklahoma, Judy and Ruggs from Alabama, and Chenault from Colorado, I think are all going to be on that Davante Adams, Julio Jones level, where at some point in their career,
yeah, you they're going to be those guys going to be there when we pick.
No, I don't. No. Nope. So
let's
let
not talk about. Let's not talk about them. Let's talk about the people we supposed to get.
Sure.
I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
You wouldn't go out and get no proven veteran.
I would. And I have listed a couple guys that I really like in the free agency big board on Packer Report. I think that AJ Green is probably going to sign for $9-10 million when he's probably worth 15, just because he sat out all last season with an injury. I think at 31 years old, I think AJ Green is still a superstar. They won't be able to afford Amari Cooper. It's just not going to happen. But you talk about Breshad Perriman as a receiver that was drafted highly, that struggled a little early, but has kind of figured out life now and is a quality player. Or Robbie Anderson, who for years in New York played with awful quarterbacks and still put up decent numbers. I like him quite a bit. Emmanuel Sanders, the guy that just got traded to San Francisco. They only had him for 8 games. He was a rental. His contract expired. They can go out and sign Emmanuel Sanders if they want. I would, if it were me running the show, I would sign one of those mid-level free agents and draft one of these kids. So what I was saying about the wide receiver class, my next tier is called quality starters. It means on a good offense, you got two outside guys, and the way they play ball now, you've got two outside guys and a slot guy. And my quality starter means that you're going to be on a good offense, you're going to be one of those three guys, and the team's going to be real happy about it. And this class has like 9 guys in that quality starter tier, all the way at the tippy top. We're talking about Jalen Reagor or T. Higgins, the big tall kid from Clemson. And at the very bottom there, you were talking about Tyler Johnson, the big slot kid from the U that absolutely torched Auburn. And by the U, I mean Minnesota. I can't believe I did that. The U is Miami. I'm up here. People call Minnesota the U, and now I've said it, and I feel disgusting. But Tyler Johnson from Minnesota, Denzel Mims from Baylor, Donovan Peoples-Jones from Michigan, Devin Duvernay is a great slot receiver from Texas. These guys are going to be plug-and-play in good offenses, but I think it would be great to sign a Robbie Anderson, sign an Emmanuel Sanders, get crazy and sign an AJ Green and draft one of these kids and completely, it would completely make the offense a different thing in my opinion. But yeah, I understand proven. That's great. I'm just saying I've got 13, 14 kids that I think are going to be between the stars who Green Bay won't have a chance to draft. I'm with you, but these guys that are in my quality starter group, there's a ton of them. And I think they'll have their pick of the litter at 30. They're going to have 6 of these guys. But I think one of these guys could fall to 62 in their second round pick. I really do. And that's where Green Bay has made hay. Jordy Nelson, second round pick. Greg Jennings, second round pick. Davante Adams, second round pick. Over and over again. James Jones, third round pick. Over and over again, this scouting group that started with Ron Wolf, then Ted Thompson, now Brian Gutekunst, have found phenomenal wide receiver value in round 2. Randall Cobb, second round pick.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Gilbert, buddy, we're running out of time. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Thanks to our sponsor, Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. Folks, there are 2 great ways to support us at the Packer Report podcast, and one of them is kind of nuts. Right now, we're doing 2 months of Packer Report VIP access for $1. If you love what we do, but you haven't quite pulled the trigger yet, you want to see what it's all about, folks, this is the time. This is the time to find out what it's all about. 60 days of Packer Report VIP access for $1. Cancel anytime, literally anytime. I mean, I think it goes to $9 a month after that. If you don't like it after 90 days, it's going to cost you $10. Send one email. They'll cancel it. There's no hassle. You're not on hold for 20 minutes. I promise. Customer service at Packer Report is phenomenal. The second way to support this show, tell all of your Packer fan friends about them. Tell them to subscribe. Tell them to give us that 5-star rating. We appreciate it so very, very much. We just want as many people as possible to listen to the show, because this baby is going to be free forever. We're not going to ever charge for this show. We just want people to listen. Thanks, everybody, one more time. Go Pack, go.